As a trumpeter, Davis had a pure, round sound, but also an unusual freedom of articulation and pitch. He was known for favoring a low register and for playing a minimalist playing style, but was also capable of highly complex and technically demanding trumpet work.
He changed the tone of the trumpet for the first time since Louis Armstrong. Everybody between Louis Armstrong and Miles Davis basically came from Louis Armstrong. But that sound, the timbre.
To examine his career is to examine the history of jazz from the mid-40s to the early 1990s, since he was in the thick of almost every important innovation and stylistic development in the music during that period.
I didn't worry about budgets. I went ahead and let Gil decide what he wanted, which was 19 musicians. And the only stipulation I made was, look, fellas, I want you to have one original composition that I can call Miles Ahead.
To this, he added an instinctive ability of self-promotion that kept him in the eye of the public.
In 2007, a small group of volunteers from then Colorado-based Freedom Foundation visited Selma for a civil rights tour.
We came to Selma just to do a little history tour, and I think when we realized that some of the history was still alive and well, we felt like there was more to it than just a tour. We had come one day and met Joanne Bland, who was very active as a young person in the movement, and she told her stories, which were very compelling, and asking her, you know, what can we do? You can't see something that is in such bad shape and walk on like you haven't seen it and go back to your own comfort. And we felt like we have to do something.
What they saw compelled them to relocate to Selma with the hopes of making positive change in the community.
I had heard a lot of people talk about it, but it wasn't until I visited that I was like, I gotta do something.
Inspired by those who'd gone before them and hearing the echoes of Dr. King's call, volunteers left jobs, homes, and family. Driving through downtown Selma on the way to their new homes, volunteers passed the Tepper's building. The tallest building in Selma, Tepper's had been vacant for over 40 years. It was built in 1907 and once stood as a busy department store. At the time of its operation, while whites entered through the front door from Broad Street, blacks were required to use the back door, entering from the alley. In the years ahead, the Tepper's building would become central to the Freedom Foundation's cause. When Southern Poverty Law Center journalist David Holthouse visited Selma, he described the following. To many outsiders, crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge into Selma feels like entering a time warp, in which the past maintains such a stranglehold on the present that a breeze off the Alabama River seems to carry a whiff of tear gas or the distant crack of a slave master's whip.
My man don't love me. He treats me oh so mean.
Enter the public and private worlds of jazz icon Billie Holiday through the poignant, beautiful photographs of Jerry Danzig.
It treats me awful mean.
Brought to you by the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service, together with the Danzig Archives. This show is for jazz fans, music fans, and anyone interested in courageous American stories and the power of art.
Oh, what little moonlight can do. Oh.
This collection of rare images portrays the legendary Lady Day in 1957, just 2 years before she passed away at age 44. The exhibition also includes objects from the era, and archival video shows Holiday in an epic performance. Visitors encounter dozens of large, stunning black and white photos. Using only available light, photographer Jerry Danzig captures her magnetism and star power on stage, along with her warmth and complexity behind the scenes, in her dressing room, at home with family, and on the streets with fans. This is a Billie Holiday the world has never seen. In this exhibition, visitors discover a new narrative,
One that reveals her dignity and true humanity.
Just treat me right, baby, and I'll stay home.
60 years after her passing, Billie Holiday's passion and originality come through in every song she sang and are forever immortalized in this spectacular exhibition.
I know you're gonna drive me away.
As worshipers fill the sanctuary, nothing can prepare the congregation for the horror to come. 12 sticks of dynamite are set to detonate beneath a nearby stairwell. A phone rings in the church office. 3 minutes. The bombers had issued their warning, and the countdown has just begun to one of the most shocking crimes in the civil rights era. Killed in the blast are Denise McNair, Cynthia Wesley, Kel Robinson, and Addie Mae Collins. Their murders are the latest violence to rock Birmingham, one of the most segregated cities in the nation. Birmingham is a place where the Klan has detonated so many bombs in black neighborhoods. The city's nickname is Bombingham.
One of the many black troops who enlisted at Benton Barracks was Elijah Madison. Born into slavery in 1841, evidence suggests that he had been held in bondage on the plantation of Robert G. Coleman near what is now Babla State Park in St. Louis County. Madison likely fled from his owner's plantation to St. Louis to heed the call of federal recruitment agents. He enlisted in the Union Army in March 1864 and was mustered into service within a week. Madison's unit, the 68th United States Colored Troops, engaged in battles at Tupelo, Mississippi in 1864 and then headed south. The unit later helped to capture a Confederate stronghold at Fort Blakely, Alabama, by digging trenches that brought Union troops closer to the fort. A commander of the 51st United States Colored Troops commented, "The behavior of the men when constructing trenches under fire was a convincing proof that the former slaves of the South cannot be excelled as soldiers." Some community members were hungry for change, but others in Selma felt differently.
The Southern Poverty Law Center identifies a lot of hate groups in the area. There are groups of individuals that come together economically or through oppression or intimidation to stop anything that would resemble progression of the South.
As word of the Freedom Foundation's efforts and values went out, rumors of outside agitators spread.
Instead of receiving the challenge and turning into some self-examination, they felt violated or offended, and instead launched attacks against the Freedom Foundation as an organization and even as some of us as individuals.
No longer was racism and hatred disguised under KKK hoods. The new hood was the internet.